Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to Stage 9, Trek FM show about the people who make Star Trek. I'm Mike.
I'm John.
And today we are going to continue our Jonathan Frakes thread.
Yeah.
With a look at his first non-Trek movie, Clockstoppers.
Clockstoppers. Yeah. Mm-hmm. A Nickelodeon movie.
Yes, yes. Released and, you know, Nickelodeon's owned by Paramount, so, you know, it's all in the family.
Yeah.
And yes. I imagine that had a lot to do with how he got the job, right? I mean, because he had made, you know, two successful films for them in the past.
Right.
First Contact and Insurrection. And hey, you know, why
give him a chance to spread his wings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Clockstoppers, it's a movie that came out in 2002. I believe it was Good Friday 2002. Because I remember him talking about how, you know, they got the Spy Kids weekend, and they thought that they were going to have success with that because Spy Kids was a big hit the year before. Yeah. And I was looking forward to it. I was like, yeah, I put the poster up in my movie theater. I'm like, Jonathan Frakes, yeah. So yeah, you want to give a synopsis of this thing?
Yes. It is a scientist has developed a means by which to step outside of time, as it were, so that you're moving much faster than time. And so you can do nifty little things like jump from place to place super fast. Of course, there is a hitch with the programming, and it has side effects. So he sends it off for the side effects to be cured by his old teacher, and his son winds up finding the watch, if you will. And as we love to say on this show, hijinks ensue.
Yes, they do. They do. It's kind of like the effect from Insurrection where, you know, they find the perfect moment and stop time. But
yeah.
But they do it using technology in this particular case.
Yeah.
So, what did you think about Clockstoppers?
I don't know the history of this movie sufficiently to say this, but my big suspicion is that this was maybe a TV movie that got elevated to theatrical release. Not saying that they made it as a TV movie, but the original plan might have been that. And they said, well, wait a minute. No, Spy Kids, we've got a shot at making this a big feature release. That's really sort of the air that emanates off of it for me.
That could be. It definitely, I don't know, there's something about these kids' movies, these kids' action movies, and there were a lot of them in that era. You know, Spy Kids, The Tuxedo was another one with Jackie Chan and everything. They don't really make movies like that too much anymore. They didn't really make movies like that prior to this either.
Yeah, it was sort of a fad that went through.
Yeah, and it was a fad that I definitely liked, you know, because I was like, you know, like Spy Kids was the first one, the big one, where I'm like, I'm looking at the trailer and everything, and I'm like, this is amazing, because this is like, you know, A-list filmmaker Robert Rodriguez, A-list action filmmaker, you know, he's done Desperado, you know, From Dusk Till Dawn, and now he's going to bring all of those action sensibilities to a kids movie. And I like the idea, like my first Robert Rodriguez movie, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, I agree with you that it's something that they should have. I mean, in a sense, since movies are escapism, I would rather they take a good director and bring them over into the genre, and in a sense, start film education at a younger age, instead of just spitting out some piece of pablum that, like, I hesitate to pull any examples, but instead of following the Gall and Globus model of just put it up on screen, who cares what it is, and instead get somebody who has good directing sensibilities, like a Frakes, to put something together that's at least quality. So you know, you're not going to win. You're not gunning for an Oscar with this thing, but put something together so that when a kid watches it, yeah, even subtly, it's like when you give a kid something good for dinner and you prepare it very well, the next time that they have the opportunity to go for fast food, they'll actually, they might hesitate and say, you know, I don't know. I think I'd rather have the pasta, you know? Do you get my point with that?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I definitely see what you're saying. And, you know, I agree with it. You know, I mean, I don't have kids, but you know, if I did, I imagine that I would sort of really gravitate towards movies like Clockstoppers as, you know, sort of like a relief from the stuff that they normally get to see.
Yes, I can tell you from personal experience that Clockstoppers would be a step up from things like Barbie and the Pink Shoes, okay, or Princess and the Pop Star.
I haven't seen either of those.
Well, they're just straight to DVD animated movies that were obviously to advance the Barbie cause. And my middle child absolutely fell in love with them. And I would have loved to have something like Clockstoppers in my back pocket. As a matter of fact, you mentioned Spy Kids. As soon as it came on Netflix, I did that exact thing. I said, well, why don't you guys watch this? You might like this. And they watched it, and it did work. They picked up a sense of quality that was maybe missing from the other movies that they had been watching.
Yeah, those Spy Kids movies are good. You know, the first one was shot by Guillermo Navarro, you know.
I did not realize that. That makes sense. Like, I'm playing parts of it back in my brain now. Now I want to go back and watch it again.
Okay. I believe that's the last movie that Rodriguez used Navarro on. I think after that, he went digital and he started shooting his own stuff, which is unfortunate. But, you know, what can you do? Yeah. But, you know, there was a thing which Harry Knowles, of all people, you know, brought up in regards to Spy Kids 3, which is the one where it's like Sylvester Stallone versus Ricardo Montalban, in a sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Knowles was like, you know, Stallone in this movie is great and everything, but I really wish they would have cast Shatner in that role. And then you could have Kirk versus Khan, the rematch, but this time Khan's the good guy and Kirk's the bad guy. And every time I think of that movie or watch that movie, I'm like, oh, why didn't they do that? That would have been amazing.
That would have been pretty fantastic, yeah.
Especially
agree.
Since Rodriguez has cited, you know, Wrath of Khan as one of his favorite movies of all time. But, oh well, what can you do?
Perhaps Shatner was busy with filming Dodgeball at the time. Who knows?
Maybe, yeah. But yeah, there are like Hugo, you know? I mean, a Scorsese kids movie, that's pretty
yeah,
crazy.
You know, it's interesting, though, because I do think that, okay, like if you look at a Clockstoppers versus a Hugo, yes, Hugo is a quote-unquote kids movie, or at least targeted toward kids, but is it as accessible? Like a movie like that feels very like when Spielberg did Tintin, where it's got that sheen to it of somebody deigning to make a kid's movie in a sense. I think you need to have somebody come at it either who just wants to make a kid's movie or somebody who is just a director who says, oh, you want to make this? Okay, I'm going to make it look great and make it work.
Well, I mean, yeah, I guess you're right. And I can kind of see the correlation to adult movies, whereas, like, if Clockstoppers is, you know, the kids' version of First Contact, then, you know, Hugo is the kids' version of Kundun or whatever, you know, whatever Scorsese movie you want to pull out there. So I guess that kind of makes sense. It's like an art house kids' movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
Basically.
Man, you know, for a while there were those rumors. Well, not really rumors. Like, it was going to happen, or that they were talking about it, but the idea of Paul Thomas Anderson making a Pinocchio movie with Robert Downey Jr.
I remember hearing about that. Yeah. That would have been extremely interesting. That would have been, that probably would have pulled me into the movie theater. I won't lie.
Oh yeah, for sure, for sure.
Yeah.
But Frakes, you know, Clockstoppers. I mean, I did like this movie, you know, a lot when I saw it. It's very, you know, sort of charming, very Frakes-ish, you know. And, you know, it's got, like, people like Michael Biehn in there, which is always fun to see, you know, as the bad guy and everything.
Yes.
Jesse Bradford, I've always been a big fan of Jesse Bradford, you know, especially in Bring It On, but also in things like Swim Fan, which is an underrated gem, and you know, Steven Soderbergh's King of the Hill back when he was just a little kid. You know?
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, you know, I like all that stuff. Produced by Gale Ann Hurd, by the way. You
right.
Know? Producer
that,
of
a
Aliens.
Double Terminator connection.
Yeah.
How crazy is that?
Yeah, it's crazy. And now she's doing, you know, Walking Dead, which everyone loves. But
yeah,
I mean, it really did feel Frakes-y, you know? It was, you know, kind of like, you know, very, very fun, very light. Had a few, you know, good jokes in there and everything like that, and
yes.
it was a good time. It told the story well. It didn't look like First Contact or like Insurrection or whatever. It looked like its own thing. In a lot of ways, it's like, oh, this is kind of like Frakes in its purest form, you know, because it's like the first time that he hasn't been, you know, like making something for someone else in a sense, you know. I mean, it's its own standalone property,
right,
where he can develop like the visual style and all that stuff,
right? He's not locked into what has come before. He can't you know, break you know, he doesn't have to worry about breaking, you know, do the uniform pips match, did we get the continuity with Worf correct, did we get, you know, he doesn't have to, you're right, he doesn't have to worry about those things. By the same token, what's interesting is I think it highlights something that would be easy to use as a pejorative, but I would not, which is that I think Frakes' talent is truly for making, some, you know, like you said, something that is just straightforward entertainment. He's a director and a very good director, a great director. But he's not a filmmaker. And I'm not saying that to be dismissive toward him. Somebody could easily say it in such a way, you know, or mean it dismissively. But what I mean by that is Frakes comes on board and directs a movie. Somebody gives him a script. Somebody gives him a pitch for a show, for a movie, whatever. And he directs it. Like you said, he will take something and he will direct the hell out of it. But he is not a George Lucas who gives birth to the entire universe in his brain and makes something, because Star Wars in a sense is informed by a lot of the same sensibilities that inform a movie like Clockstoppers. Accessible to kids, light, fast, fun, action packed, get them in the theater sort of thing. But there is just that difference of, I don't know how to say it exactly, like a difference of scope, or a difference of weight to it, where it doesn't need to be an art house film to be the work of a filmmaker. It's just one of those things where I think this really highlights where Frakes' true strength is taking the material that's there and just making it work. I mean, this is a kid's movie, essentially, from 2002 that I sat down and watched and was entertained through the whole thing. But if you ask me a year from now, do you remember watching Clockstoppers? I will think for a second and I will say, oh, yeah, the thing with the watches. Yes, I got that.
Yeah. This is only the second time that I've seen it. And aside from the basic premise, you know, which is like they can stop time, you know, with their watch, I didn't really remember anything about it, you know, but I just remembered enjoying it. And I enjoyed it this time, too. You know, I'm not going to, you know, run out and buy the Blu-ray or anything like that. But,
right.
You know, I found it to be definitely entertaining. And, you know, I mean, I think that you're right, you know, what you're saying about Frakes, you know, he's not an auteur or whatever. And this isn't an event picture like, you know, Star Wars or even something like Hugo. You know, this is something where it's like, hey, let's go, you know, it's Saturday afternoon, let's take the family out and see this movie just because it's playing. And, you know, we're going to have a good time, and then we're going to go get some pizza and, you know.
Right.
It's like a very suburban movie, it feels like. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Now, even though it is very suburban, I do think there is a hats off moment or two to the management of the effects, because this is obviously a movie made in a post-Matrix world, and it fully embraces the idea of, okay, well, let's do the bullet time thing, but do it in our own way and have a lot of fun with it. And I thought it was very clever when he had them going through and moving the water in the sprinkler, and it was a very convincing effect. I mean, when you think the evolution of digital effects, you know, Matrix is this big breakthrough, and then 3 years later, it's just a given that, okay, we are going to have somebody playing with water that's frozen in time and having things moving slowly, and it'll look real.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there are several moments. I think there are some real sparks of creativity in it with how he approaches a scene, like French Stewart, who's the scientist that's trapped by the evil government contractor, when they slow him down, when he's in his trapped little lab and he's, you know, he's writing on the board, "You're killing me, set me free." And so they gas him, and you see him moving around super fast, and then he slows down. It's just things like that are very creative. But at the same time, what's so interesting, what smacks about the idea that maybe this was a TV movie that got escalated, is you have these moments where they are stepping between time and dodging water and moving stuff. But then when French Stewart has aged, the makeup is, it's not really big screen credible, I guess is the way that I would say it.
Yeah, they probably didn't get Michael Westmore for this one, right?
Yes, right. I think that Frakes missed him a little bit.
It is interesting that he had Peter E. Berger as his editor. He's someone who worked with Frakes on Insurrection, but he had also done two prior Star Trek movies. He did Generations, and he did Star Trek IV: The Voyage Home. And I don't know, I kind of glancing at his credits, his filmography, it looks like he had a pretty solid relationship with Paramount more than anything else. And since this was a Paramount movie too, I'm wondering if that's why, you know, he was working on this film. But maybe it was because, you know, he had a good relationship with the Frakes. But he would go on to do a number of sort of like kid-oriented movies in the right after Clockstoppers. He did Like Mike, Garfield, Alvin and the Chipmunks, which I think was from the director of Garfield. So, you know, I mean, it's kind of interesting. I mean, is there a connection there where Frakes was like, "I need Berger," or was it, you know, just a situation where the two of them, you know, kind of got the job under similar circumstances? I don't know, but it's kind of cool to see those connections when they pop up.
Yeah, I mean, it is cool. I would suspect it would be something like, you know, Frakes accepts the job and they say, "You're going to be working with Berger." And he goes, "Oh, cool. Awesome."
Yeah, that's probably how it works a lot of the time. That's definitely how it works in TV, it seems, you know.
Yes.
But that's cool. And Frakes, you know, being a television director, is someone who probably adapts very easily to different crew members and teams, you know, and
I also want to say, though, something that I notice when I watch a movie like Clockstoppers, and I think this is an important thing too, is I think that it's very difficult, but I think it's also very necessary sometimes to watch something like this to remind you to maybe not take things so seriously when you go to see a movie.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to go into Clockstoppers and try to science it out or try to figure out nitpicky little details. I think that a movie like this is great as sort of a palate cleanser to remind you that it's okay just to go and have some fun sometimes.
Yeah.
You don't have to expect some world-changing event out of every movie that you see. It's okay to go see something that is light and, you know, for lack of a better word, forgettable. It's okay. And it does such a good job of setting up its own premise and not worrying about the nitpicky little details. In a sense, you said, you know, this is purer freaks. Maybe that's more true than we realize, because again, getting back to the, you have to follow an established this or that. If he's working in Star Trek, he knows he's going to have to build in a couple of exposition scenes with fake sciencey stuff so that the audience doesn't sit there and reject it and say, well, they never explained how this happened on what have you, or Baku or any. He can just say, the watch stops time.
Mm-hmm.
Go. Yeah. And that's fun. Why not?
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's definitely true. Yeah. It seems like there were a lot of movies kind of like that in this time period, you know, like fun, disposable action movies. I mean, I guess there are now too, but it seems like this was like the glory years for that. Maybe it's just because that's what I was watching back then, but things like Charlie's Angels and, you know, stuff like that. I think that's one of the reasons why I like Triple X Return of Xander Cage so much, you know, even though no one else does. Because I highly recommend it, because it's very, very enjoyable. It's ridiculous. The dialogue is the worst you've ever heard, but it's like laughably bad. Like it had to have been intentional, that kind of thing. And it's just a lot of fun.
You know what? I agree with you, because I'm thinking about it here. Here's a modern example. You're citing Triple X, The Return of Xander Cage, and then throw that up against something like, and we've only seen the previews up to this point, of Transformers The Last Knight.
Mm-hmm.
You're a movie about giant robots hitting each other. Let's calm down a little bit and just have some silliness here.
Yeah.
Let's just recognize, let's not have sarcastic humor or zingers. Why not get Frakes for a Transformers movie? Because I will go see Frakes directing a Transformers movie because I know he's going to just have fun with it. And he's not going to try to shoehorn in this idea of Arthurian legend into everything. Or if he does, it's going to be with that Frakesy wink at the audience of, yeah, we're having fun, guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's definitely true. Those movies have become rather unwieldy. I mean, the last one's like 2 hours and 45 minutes long.
Didn't even make it halfway through.
It's pretty crazy. It's pretty crazy. But, you know, what can you do? What can you do? Now that Akiva Goldsman is running that writer's room, maybe we'll see a change.
I don't know if I'll see that change necessarily, but somebody will.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, Frakes, you know, is in part of that fun appeal. Like, I don't know, did you see that thing? Larry posted a thing on the Babel conference with a clip from an episode of Castle that Frakes directed where they're at, like, a convention.
Yeah.
And it, like, starts off with Frakes going up to get Castle's autograph, and he's like, oh, my God, you know, this is so exciting. I'm your number one fan. And then, you know, he gets the autograph and he walks away. And then Castle says, like, oh, man, they fall so far, or something along those lines. And, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah. I mean, that's not the first time that Frakes has played himself in something that he's directed. He does it in Roswell as well. But, you know, like in this movie, there's that line where, you know, the protagonist is talking to his love interest. And the love interest says, make it so, number one. And he gives her this look like, what?
Yeah, she says in Venezuela we had Star Trek or something like that.
Yeah, like what? We have Star Trek in Venezuela too, you know? And, you know, I'm guessing that most kids watching Clockstoppers aren't going to be like, hey, because it's directed by Jonathan Frakes, so you get it? And no, they're just going to be like, whatever. But it's there for us.
It's a joke for the adult-ish people in the audience who will get it.
the people who are going to see it because it's directed by Jonathan Frakes, of which yes. I'm sure there were many.
Probably so.
Right. There's two for two right here in this conversation, right? So
that's yeah, there you go.
There you go. Yeah. And math. That's how math works. 100%. 100%.
Yep.
Yeah. So any final thoughts on Clockstoppers?
You know, yeah. I mean, if you have kids and you haven't seen it, go ahead and watch it. Or if you have, you know, an hour and a half to burn and you just want to watch something light and fun on a Saturday afternoon, yeah, go ahead. Pick it out. Give it a watch.
Yeah, I would definitely recommend it too. As someone who does not have kids and was not a kid when he saw it, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it on this viewing as well. It's not, you know, must-see entertainment. It's no First Contact. But, you know, it's definitely very entertaining, charming performances. I thought the sets were really cool, you know? I was like, wow,
yeah,
they spent some money on this, you know, on these sets. And, yeah, I, on the whole, I would say I would definitely recommend it. Now, did you see his other non-Trek movie, Thunderbirds?
I have not.
Which has Bill Paxton in it. He's got Michael Biehn in this one. He's got
wow.
He's got Hicks and then Hudson. So that's cool.
Well, actually, and Paxton was in Terminator as well.
Yeah, it's true. That's yeah. true. And yeah, I mean Thunderbirds. Now I don't know. Are you a fan of the original Thunderbirds show?
I mean, as much as anybody is. You know,
not as much as Darren Moser is. I'm guessing. But,
probably not. Probably not. That's a fair statement to make.
Yeah. I never really watched the original. So I wasn't going into it with any baggage. I was going into it with, you know, hey, Jonathan Frakes directed this movie. I'm there, you know. Yeah. And, you know, very similar vein to Clockstoppers, I think. And I, as someone who has absolutely nothing invested in the franchise, I enjoyed it. I didn't think it was as good as this, you know. I didn't think it's as good as his other movies, but still definitely a very enjoyable movie. Now, I know that, you know, true Thunderbirds fans, you know, they want to, you know, burn that movie to the ground. And, you know, maybe there's reasons for that. Maybe Thunderbirds has this extremely, you know, delicate mythology and, you know, to destroy it by having like people instead of puppets or something is like a travesty. I don't know. But as someone who couldn't care less about any of that, I can say that I enjoyed watching Jonathan Frakes' Thunderbirds.
No, I'll have to check it out. There's absolutely zero chance that it is as disappointing a TV to film adaptation as the Beverly Hillbillies. So
was that a, I mean, I haven't seen the show or the movie, but I can't imagine anyone watching the show and then going to see the movie and having the movie be bad and then saying, that was disappointing.
Yo, right here. 100% of your co-hosts have.
Okay.
I am a huge fan of the Beverly Hillbillies, both in black and white and color television. Mm-hmm. Although the black and white era, stronger. Have to admit.
Yeah.
But the movie, I felt bad for Jim Varney because Jim Varney was given his all and he did a great Jed Clampett, but everything else around him was just a nightmarish panoply of wrong. It was just awful. But if you watch it without Beverly Hillbillies, I still say it's bad. But it's even worse if you're a Beverly Hillbillies fan and you go to see it and you say, oh, no, 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 no.
There seems to be this weird shift in TV to movie adaptations where, like, back in that time period, the idea was, this is a funny TV show. It'll make a funny movie. Yeah. And that really didn't work out so well, where now the philosophy seems to be, people thought that was a good TV show that's funny and would make a funny movie, you know? Like
yeah.
21 Jump Street, and then we've got Baywatch coming up, which looks really, really good, you know,
yes.
and everything. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I kind of like this era better in terms of TV adaptations, I have to say.
I would agree with you.
Yeah.
Although, of course, the best TV adaptation, TV to film adaptation of all time has to be Star Trek, right?
Yeah, I guess you're right, right? Yeah. Oh, wow. Nice way to bring it all back home, John.
That's what I specialize in, Mike.
Well, if you want to see Clock Stoppers, and, you know, I mean, you could just rent it like we did back in the 90s. But if you don't want to do that and you have HBO, you can watch it for free with the HBO On Demand or the app or the Go or the Now or the anything. If you have something with an H, a B, and an O in it, then chances are you can watch Clock Stoppers. So go ahead and check it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's been fun talking about Clock Stoppers today, but that's not all we're talking about on Trek FM this week, so here's a look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
My casting choices, okay, would be for Ruck, you gotta go with Dave Bautista, right? He's Drax in Guardians of the Galaxy. He played Jinx in...
Yeah, Inspector?
Yeah, was that Jinx? What's his name? Hinks. Mr.
Hinks. Ooh, Mr. Hinks. Yeah, Mr. Hinks.
That's the wrong James Bond film, everybody.
The 602 Club.
Going back to the Gotham thing really quickly, I know this is semi-derailing. Why would you want to move to Gotham? I mean, he has to have been there. It's like the picture that he has on his wall is this beautiful, shining, like, daytime view, if I'm not mistaken, of Gotham, which I don't think we ever see. It was like, I'm not really sure. Charm City looks quite nice. Like, so.
Saturday Morning Trek.
It's very much like a continuation of the original series.
You know what? You raise a very good point, and it's one we probably should have talked about earlier, is that we talk so much about the animation and the limitations of the medium that we forget about the writing. And overall, it's pretty strong throughout the run.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out these shows and discover what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button. That helps us out greatly and makes it easier for other listeners to find the show as they search iTunes. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Stitcher, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and of course you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website and grab the RSS link as well. All right, we would like to thank our associate producers, Jeff Sutter, Chris Steftenagel, and Norman C. Lau. Thank you very much, guys. If you would like to support the network and keep all of our shows coming to you each week, head on over to patreon.com and become a patron. If you visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you'll find our current goals and different milestone contribution levels, along with all the great perks we have for you. These perks include early access to content, exclusive content, producer credits, seats on our content development team, and more. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the information at patreon.com/trekfm. If you want to contact us, you can find us on Twitter at TrekFM. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. Facebook is also where you'll find the Babel Conference, which is our listener forum. Just type the Babel Conference, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook. John, where can people find you on the internet?
Look for Kessel Junkie lurking out there on the internet. You can also find me co-hosting Words with Nerds with my pal Craig. You can find me co-hosting Aggressive Negotiations, a Star Wars podcast over on the Nerd Party Network with Matthew Rushing. And you can also find me co-hosting a show called Great Shot Kid, which my beloved co-host on that show would be very familiar to people here, Mike Schindler. And Mike, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me right there on thenerdparty.com doing that, and you can also find me on commentarytrackstars.com doing commentary track stars, and you can find me on Twitter at mumbles3k. All right. Well, that's it for this week. Next week, we're going to have a little fun and do some Dream Team Fantasy Studio head showrunner casting director something, director casting, not casting director.
We promise a shorter title next week. We promise. We promise that.
Yes. But what we're going to do is we're going to give our picks for who we would want to see direct Discovery. Thank you.